My name is Evan White, and you're listening to the Stories on Stage Davis podcast. This year has seen us all face a great many challenges, from the pandemic and the raging wildfires in Northern California, to civil unrest across the country and a tumultuous political season that comes to a head next month, there has been no shortage of things to weigh us down. It's a pleasure, then, to produce these episodes for all of you and provide a brief respite from the outside world while we slip into stories that take us into the lives of others. And isn't empathy what we need more of now? George Saunders said that writing is an act of suspending judgment. That same compassion comes across when we read, or listen to, a great story, too. Whether we're moved to laugh or cry, sharing an experience connects us to one another. Philip Glass said that music is a place. We go there when we listen to it. Great writing can be a place, too. We're transported there with a great story, and it's one of the ways we connect to people we've never met. In this week's episode, that's especially true, because we're presenting a nonfiction story. Seeping Past Theseus was written by Ariel Schussler, who holds a BA in philosophy from UC Berkeley and a dual MFA in fiction and nonfiction from St. Mary's College in California. Reading Schussler's story is Andrea Love, a Sacramento-based actor, composer, teacher, and writer who is making her debut with our series. Stay tuned after the reading to hear Ariel Schussler on the inspiration behind her story. But first, here's Andrea Love reading the 2020 Under the Gum Tree and Stories on Stage Davis Creative Nonfiction Contest winner, Seeping Past Theseus.
Seeping Past Theseus by Ariel Schussler. There is a paradox called the Ship of Theseus, concerned with a dilapidated ship undergoing heavy repairs. In the paradox, each of the ship's planks of wood are removed and replaced, as are each of its 30 oars, its sails, each and every rope, and so on. Years pass, and the ship is completely restored. By then, not a single original part of the ship remains. And so, the paradox... is it still the same ship? This apple cake recipe is my mother's. I remember the first time I tried it, I was surprised by how sweet it was. She doesn't like sweets. I asked her for this recipe. It is the only recipe of hers I have. You need 200 gram margarine. She means margarine. She prefers dairy-free. I know better when it comes to baking. It is all about chemistry. I use 14 tablespoons of sweet cream butter. The fat content of the butter will help with the texture. She is not as interested in the integrity of a dessert. To her, the dessert is an afterthought. A prepackaged box with a panel that reads, "Add water and eggs." She never liked sweets, and she hated Halloween. When my brother, sister, and I were young, after we would come home and lay down our lightsabers and peel off our fairy wings, she would demand that we hand over our pillowcases of candy. We would watch her turn the floral-printed cotton inside out over an open black garbage can in the kitchen. Once my 5-year-old sister tried to outsmart her by hiding some candy in her piggy bank and then hiding the piggy bank under her bed. Months later, my mother would follow a trail of ants under the bed and through the piggy's nose to find that candy. My sister never did anything like that ever again. For me, dessert has always been the main event. I labor for hours to put together the perfect pies, taking special care to blend the pastry dough by hand, lattice crusts and flute edges. She would watch me make those pies and shake her head. "Who cares that much?" she would say. "I do," I would think. "I care." Philosophers have been arguing about the ship of Theseus for centuries. Some say that it is the same ship, regardless of the replaced materials. Others claim that the ship is not the same, that in losing all of its original parts, it has become a fundamentally different ship. The stakes of this paradox are typical of other philosophical quandaries. The very way we come to understand or know things can completely unravel based on how we answer the paradox. Should one claim that the ship is fundamentally different, an argument could be made that the most important part of something's identity is its material constitution. We are no more than the planks, the oars, and sails that comprise us. Should one claim that the ship is still the same ship, an argument could be made that the true identity of a thing goes beyond its physical composition and includes an immaterial quality. There is more to us than the planks, the oars, and the sails. We are more than the sum of our parts. Each of these possibilities carries different consequences, even beyond a philosopher's intended scope. 1/2 cup sugar. I add an additional 1/2 cup of brown sugar. The brown sugar will make the cake softer and sweeter. The concern with white sugar is that it will crystallize and harden, making the pastry or baked good hard, too. The secret to super soft cookies is the use of brown sugar. I can tell after one bite of a cookie the ratio of brown sugar to white. She makes hard cookies, the hardest I have ever had. They are filled with seeds and coconut and bizarre grains unknown to most. She would always offer them to me with a twinkle and a smile, proudly stating that they either have low sugar or no sugar. She doesn't know me at all. 3 eggs. After years for giving me a hard time about being a vegetarian, sneaking chicken into my food or making soup with beef stock and not telling me, she became one herself last spring. She watched a Facebook video about what they do to male chicks, how they tear them apart in a large shredder. I was surprised that she didn't know. She doesn't eat eggs anymore. There are egg alternatives, but I am not going to use them for this. Eggs bind ingredients together, and they make pastries and baked goods airy. I want this cake to be fluffy and rich. I take 3 eggs out of the carton. I don't have to worry about her not eating it. This cake isn't for her. She doesn't live here anymore. The ship of Theseus has taken on many iterations over the years. With each iteration, the stakes change. For example, maybe this paradox is easily solved if we reconsider how we properly name things. After all, names don't always have to mean identity. Those can be separate and distinct things. But then the scope of the paradox shifts. Is this paradox about identity or about proper naming? Maybe the problem isn't about whether the identity of a thing changes, but rather, is it about the way language can fail us, or is it about whether or not change affects the ontological status of an object in our universe? While the paradox's stakes or application may shift, its status as a paradox is continually affirmed. And now it is about containing the paradox's scope before the consequences seep past its bounds. 1/2 cup soy milk. I don't like the flavor of soy. I prefer almond. But I bought heavy cream to make the salted caramel sauce topping, so I use the heavy cream instead. The fat content will make the cake richer, though denser. I don't think she has ever bought heavy cream in her life. She likes to make do with what she has in her fridge, even if the recipe calls for something different. This is the difference between a baker who knows what they are doing and one who doesn't. You can't off the cuff with baking the way you can with cooking. Baking is precise and purposeful. She doesn't have the patience for such things. She told me so many times as she watched me pipe icing on cakes or make my own apricot nectarine jam for thumbprint cookies. She doesn't need to tell me. I know. 3 cups flour, 1 teaspoon baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon cinnamon. I add a dash of nutmeg, allspice, and a bit of salt. The best way to add dimension to otherwise super sweet desserts is by adding salt and spice. It prevents sugar from overpowering the palate. She gets spices. She uses spices in her cooking: turmeric, cumin, coriander, fenugreek. She uses the same spices in nearly everything, even if the recipes don't traditionally call for them. But she can't leave anything well enough alone. Her pasta sauce has had pomegranate juice in it. Peanut butter has found its way into meatballs. Date syrup in her soups. She likes to experiment in the kitchen, and she never makes the same thing the same way twice. I don't know if it is her desire to make do with what she has in her fridge, her inability to recognize when something is the best it can get, or her refusal to be tied down to instruction. I'm surprised she even has this recipe. Instead of asking whether or not the ship is still the same ship after all of its substantive repairs, I find myself asking the question I always ask myself before embarking upon any kind of philosophical journey. Does it matter? Does this matter? Does it matter if this ship is or isn't the ship of Theseus? And does it matter what we call it? My gut reaction to most questions of mattering is always that everything matters, so I can't stop there. I put additional pressure. Why does this matter to me? And I hesitate to answer that question. 1 tablespoon vanilla. I add a teaspoon of rum extract. 4 apples, peeled and cut to small cubes. It takes me a moment, but I realize that she means peeled. English is her third language. I try to peel the apples in one long strip. No one will see the peel, but I have the patience for it, and I like to see how long it can get. In my pies, I prefer to slice my apples to ensure even tenderness of the apples, but for this cake, I will cube them to create greater variation in the cake's texture. In a big bowl, mix margarine, sugar, and eggs. Add to the mixture soy milk and flour and baking powder. Mix in with a wood spoon. Add cinnamon, vanilla, and mix gently till you get an even dough. I change the recipe to, in a big bowl, mix butter and sugar until fluffy. This will make sure the cake is airy. And then mix in eggs, vanilla, and milk. Usually one should mix wet ingredients with wet ingredients and dry ingredients. Mix the flour, baking powder, and cinnamon separately. This method ensures that the mixture isn't overworked and the cake doesn't come out too tough. I know and appreciate these things. I take note of how to make the best of anything, how to make things perfectly. 1 year, I spent days making a Mother's Day spread. It was going to be a tea party. I baked pumpkin croissants, put together a cheese plate and a fruit salad, and made fresh fruit tarts, shortbread crust, vanilla custard, and syrupped fruits. I cleared off the dining table and dressed it for the event. A gold-threaded white linen table runner, wood platters for the cheese, crackers, nuts, and fruit, white scalloped dining plates over wooden chargers, white scalloped tea set, and white scalloped serving plates for the croissants and tarts. She pushed away the cheese because she decided she was going dairy-free that day. Passed on the croissants. She took a single bite of a tart before saying it was too sweet. She ate some crackers and the fruit. Then she left, and I threw everything away. I start with the possible options and try to work backward from there. It may be the same ship. It may not be the same ship. Things are no more than their material components. Things are more than their material components. Our language, as commonly used, cannot rectify this kind of linguistic ambiguity. Or maybe it can. I focus on these possibilities. I taste them on my tongue, profiling their aftertastes. My evaluation focuses on the qualities of the flavor and my response to those flavors. Which are the sweetest? Which are the most bitter? And what lingers on the palate? I try to focus on these avenues of thought, but I know I am not doing the paradox justice. There is more here, and I am limiting the scope of consequences to prevent seeping. There are concerns beyond the philosophical ones, and this is the very thing I have been avoiding. Add in the apples and mix in folding movement. Put it in 2 bread baking pan and bake for 25 min in 385. Presentation matters to me, so I pour the mixture into a bundt cake pan. The pan is decorated with leaves and other flora. I know that the mixture won't take the shape perfectly because of the apple chunks, but I didn't want to use a traditional cake pan. I want the cake to be pretty, to be a gift. Cake is never just cake. I prepare a salted caramel sauce on my stovetop by heating butter, sugar, and salt together. I wait until it reaches the right temperature before moving it off the heat and mixing the heavy cream into it. I let the caramel cool. The cake and sauce are for my first New Year's meal without my mom. She moved out of the country to be closer to her family. She wanted to be home for the holidays. She never taught me how to make anything for the holidays besides the apple cake. When I am invited to a friend's holiday dinner, I decide to bring this cake. After the meal, I cut the cake into slices, drizzle the caramel sauce, and serve it warmed with vanilla bean ice cream on top. I sneak the first bite, even though it is bad manners. I don't want to serve bad cake. My fears dissolve as I chew. The cake is moist and fluffy, perfectly sweetened and spiced, with a surprised tartness of an apple halfway through the bite. The salted caramel adds a bit of warmth, and the ice cream a bit of cool. It is perfect. Friends return for seconds. Some pour the salted caramel into a shot glass to drink it straight. Others spoon final crumbs into remaining pools of vanilla and caramel in an attempt to clear their plates. I am asked for the recipe. Once. Twice. I hesitate. Not because I want to hoard its secrets. I am not that kind of baker. All potential philosophical consequences aside, we know that there are ships and there are cakes. And that for some reason it matters what we call them, but not just because we want to be right about what constitutes identity, or because we want to use language as effectively as possible. What matters is that there was a legendary ship that belonged to Theseus. This ship had adventures, and brought pride to Athens, and became the stuff of myths and legends. But as time passed, the ship's planks began to rot, and its ropes started to unravel, and the ship could no longer brave the open water or go on adventures or bring glory to Athens. Water began flooding the bottom of the ship, and the oars splintered, and a decision had to be made. Should the ship be allowed to sink while also preserving its authenticity without question? Or should it be fixed, even if that meant that it was fundamentally changed, perhaps in an irrevocable way? Regardless of philosophical consequences, the ship was fixed. Planks were replaced, ropes rethreaded, and oars updated. And this ship, whether it be a new ship or still the same old ship, went on to sail the seas. Those who identified the ship as being no more than the construction of its original material parts never saw the ship of Theseus sail again. As they clung to their idea of material authenticity, the ship of Theseus faded quickly out of this world. And for those who rejoiced at the ship of Theseus sailing again, they realized that their commitment was more to an idea than a ship, and they would never be able to cease their toil. They would go on forever, replace the plank after plank, rope after rope, oar after oar, in service of something greater that had once captured a part of their heart they could not stand to lose. Because they would rather have a ship to call Theseus's than no ship at all, or the reality of a rotting ship. So they waxed the decks and strung the ropes and swung around masts, all so they could say that they had seen the ship of Theseus disappear into the red sun of the horizon, and that it was beautiful. So I have a choice. I can tell them it is my recipe, or I can tell them it is my mother's. Each of these possibilities carry different consequences, and the consequences cannot be contained. They seep. Perhaps that is the answer to the paradox. Regardless of how things change or actually are, we want the important things, like childhood cakes and legendary ships, to stay the same, even if it is only in name. We would rather this small lie, this tiny and forgivable fib of authenticity, than the idea that these things are gone, forever, corroded like the anchor of a ship in the seawater of time. The truth is, we would rather that we remember things as we want to remember them, gleaming, perfect, seaworthy, and impeccably constructed, than face the fact that our ship was always doomed to rot, and it would never sail again. We want things to be more than what they are, because if the weathered planks, the frayed rope, and the torn sails are all that things are, then we have to accept that this is all that there is. And that would be fine, if that were enough for us. But it isn't. I give them the recipe as prepared, and I tell them, it is my mother's.
This is Arielle Schussler, and you have just listened to my piece, Seeping Past Theseus. Before this essay became Seeping Past Theseus, it was a smaller, shorter piece called Apple Cake. Apple Cake was born of the question, what traditionally non-literary formats can I use to structure an essay? The answer came easily enough, a recipe. In fact, I really was baking the apple cake from the recipe, just as described in the piece, as I was writing it. And my mother really had just moved out of the country, so this really was my first holiday season without her. I wrote apple cake in real time, and it was a lovely little piece, but something was missing, and I couldn't figure out what. I let that piece rest for a number of years before I was ready to pick it up again and figure out what was missing. There's a joke I like to make sometimes about most anything. You know what this needs? More philosophy. And unlike the many times at various dinner parties where I was clearly mistaken, this time, I wasn't. I reread the piece and saw the work I, the narrator, was doing on the original recipe, and I was reminded of the Ship of Theseus paradox. And I, being the occasionally insolent philosophy student in school, though I personally would call myself meta-inclined, I always wanted to know the why behind the why. And for the Ship of Theseus, setting aside sunk cost fallacies, why would anyone care this much about a ship and whether or not it could really be called the Ship of Theseus? I think my piece, as it now stands, can answer that question.
You've just heard Seeping Past Theseus by Arielle Schussler, read by Andrea Love. Seeping Past Theseus appears in the fall 2020 issue of Under the Gum Tree magazine, which is available for purchase at underthegumtree.com. You can also subscribe to the magazine and help support one of Northern California's premier literary and visual arts publications. The Stories on Stage Davis podcast will be back next week on Saturday, October 24th. With the second winning story of the Under the Gum Tree and Stories on Stage Davis Creative Nonfiction Contest. The Money Place by Caroline Goodwin will be read by returning Stories on Stage Davis actor Kat Miller. We hope you'll tune in. The Stories on Stage Davis podcast is a sponsored project of YOLO Arts, a nonprofit arts organization, and supported in part by a grant from the City of Davis Arts and Cultural Affairs Program. Find upcoming episodes, view our archive of past episodes, and help support our series at storiesonstagedavis.com.